Nicholas Nickleby by Charles Dickens. Mr. Ralph Nickleby was not, strictly speaking, what you would call a merchant. Neither was he a banker, nor an attorney, nor a special pleader, nor a notary. He was certainly not a tradesman, and still less could he lay any claim to the title of a professional gentleman, for it would have been impossible to mention any recognised profession to which he belonged. Nevertheless, as he lived in a spacious house in Golden Square, which, in addition to a brass plate upon the street door, had another brass plate 2 sizes and a half smaller upon the left-hand doorpost, displaying the word Office, it was clear that Mr. Ralph Nickleby did, or pretended to do, business of some kind. And the fact, if it required any further circumstantial evidence, was abundantly demonstrated by the diurnal attendance between the hours of 9:30 and 5 of a sallow-faced clerk in rusty brown, who sat upon an uncommonly hard stool in a species of butler's pantry at the end of the passage, and always had a pen behind his ear when he answered the bell. Mr. Nickleby closed an account book which lay on his desk as his clerk presented himself in the room. This functionary was a tall man of middle age, with 2 goggle eyes, whereof one was a fixture, a rubicund nose, a cadaverous face, and a suit of clothes, if the term be allowable when they suited him not at all, much the worse for wear, very much too small, and placed upon such a short allowance of buttons that it was marvellous how he contrived to keep them on.
"Ah, Noggs," said Mr. Nickleby, looking up. "The letter about the mortgage has come, has it? I thought it would."
"Wrong," replied Newman Noggs.
"What? And nobody called respecting it?"
Noggs shook his head.
"What has come, then?"
inquired Mr. Nickleby. "I have," said Newman.
"What else?" demanded the master sternly.
"This," said Newman, offering a sealed letter.
"Postmark Strand, black wax, black border, woman's hand, CN in the corner."
"Black wax," said Mr. Nickleby, glancing at the letter. "I know something of that hand, too. Newman, I shouldn't be surprised if my brother were dead."
Mr. Nickleby snatched the letter from his assistant, opened and read it.
"He is dead," said Mr. Nickleby. "Well, that's a sudden thing. I shouldn't have thought it, really."
"Children alive?" inquired Noggs.
"Why, that's the very thing," replied Mr. Nickleby,
as though his thoughts were about them at that moment.
"They are both alive."
"Both," repeated Newman Noggs in a low voice.
"And the widow, too," added Mr. Nickleby. "And all 3 come to London, confound 'em. All 3 here, Newman."
Newman turned from his master, and his face was curiously twisted, as by a spasm, but whether of paralysis or grief or inward laughter, nobody but himself could possibly explain. Leaving Golden Square, Mr. Nickleby made the best of his way to the Strand, and, referring to his letter as if to ascertain the number of the house he wanted, stopped at a private door about halfway down that crowded thoroughfare. A lady in deep mourning rose as Mr. Ralph Nickleby entered, and leant upon the arm of a slight but very beautiful girl of about 17, who had been sitting by her. A youth, who appeared a year or 2 older, stepped forward and saluted Ralph as his uncle.
"Eh," growled Ralph with an ill-favoured frown. "You are Nicholas, I suppose."
"That is my name, sir," replied the youth.
"Put my hat down," said Ralph imperiously. "Well, ma'am, how do you do? You must bear up against sorrow, ma'am. I always do."
"Mine was no common loss," said Mrs. Nickleby, applying her handkerchief to her eyes.
"It was no uncommon loss, ma'am," returned Ralph coolly. "Husbands die every day, ma'am, and wives too."
"And brothers also, sir," said Nicholas with a glance of indignation.
"Yes, sir, and puppies and pug dogs likewise," replied his uncle, taking a chair. "You didn't mention in your letter what my brother's complaint was, ma'am."
"The doctors could attribute it to no particular disease," said Mrs. Nickleby, shedding tears. "We have too much reason to fear that he died of a broken heart."
"Pugh," said Ralph. "There's no such thing. I can understand a man's dying of a broken neck or a broken head, but a broken heart? Nonsense. It's the cant of the day. If a man can't pay his debts, he dies of a broken heart and his widow's a martyr."
"Some people, I believe, have no hearts to break," observed Nicholas quietly.
"How old is this boy, for God's sake?"
inquired Ralph, wheeling back in his chair and surveying his nephew from head to foot with intense scorn.
"Nicholas is very nearly 19," replied the widow.
19, eh?" said Ralph. "And what do you mean to do for your bread, sir?"
"Not to live upon my mother," replied Nicholas, his heart swelling as he spoke.
"You'd have little enough to live upon if you did," retorted the uncle,
eyeing him contemptuously. "Whatever it be," said Nicholas, flushed with anger, "I shall not look to you to make it more."
"Nicholas, my dear, recollect yourself," remonstrated Mrs. Nickleby. "Dear Nicholas, pray," urged the young lady.
"Hold your tongue, sir," said Ralph. "Upon my word, fine beginnings, Mrs. Nickleby, fine beginnings."
Mrs. Nickleby made no other reply than entreating Nicholas by a gesture to keep silent, and the uncle and nephew looked at each other for some seconds without speaking. The face of the old man was stern, hard-featured, and forbidding, that of the young one open, handsome, and ingenuous. There was an emanation from the warm young heart in his look and bearing which kept the old man down. This contrast galled Ralph to the heart's core, and he hated Nicholas from that hour.
"Well, ma'am," said Ralph impatiently, "the creditors have administered, you tell me, and there's nothing left for you?"
"Nothing,"
replied Mrs. Nickleby.
"And you spent what little money you had in coming all the way to London from Devonshire to see what I could do for you?" pursued Ralph.
"I hoped," faltered Mrs. Nickleby, "that you might have an opportunity of doing something for your brother's children. It was his dying wish that I should appeal to you in their behalf."
"I don't know how it is," muttered Ralph, walking up and down the room, "but whenever a man dies without any property of his own, he always seems to think he has a right to dispose of other people's. What is your daughter fit for, ma'am?"
"Kate has been well educated," sobbed Mrs. Nickleby.
"Well, we must try and get you apprenticed at some boarding school," said Ralph. "Have you ever done anything, sir?"
"No," replied Nicholas bluntly.
"No, I thought not. Are you willing to work, sir?" he inquired, frowning on his nephew.
"Of course I am," replied Nicholas haughtily.
"Then see here, sir. This caught my eye this morning, and you may thank your stars for it."
Mr. Ralph Nickleby took a newspaper from his pocket, and after unfolding it and looking for a short time among the advertisements, read as follows.
"Education. At Mr. Wackford Squeers Academy, Dotheboys Hall, at the delightful village of Dotheboys, near Greta Bridge in Yorkshire. An able assistant wanted, annual salary £5. Mr. Squeers is in town at the Saracen's Head." "There," said Ralph, folding the paper again. "Let him get that situation, and his fortune is made."
"Nicholas, my dear, I wish you would say something," said Mrs. Nickleby.
"Yes, mother, yes," said Nicholas, who had hitherto remained silent and absorbed in thought. "If I am fortunate enough to be appointed to this post, sir, what will become of those I leave behind?"
"Your mother and sister, sir," replied Ralph, "will be provided for in that case, not otherwise, by me."
"Then," said Nicholas, starting gaily up and wringing his uncle's hand, "I am ready to do anything you wish me. Let us try our fortune with Mr. Squeers at once." At the Saracen's Head, they found Mr. Squeers standing by one of the coffee-room fireplaces. Mr. Squeers' appearance was not prepossessing. He had but one eye, and the popular prejudice runs in favour of two. The eye he had was unquestionably useful, but decidedly not ornamental, being a greenish-grey and in shape resembling the fanlight of a street door. The blank side of his face was much wrinkled and puckered up, which gave him a very sinister appearance, especially when he smiled, at which times his expression bordered closely on the villainous. With a harsh voice and a coarse manner, he was about 2 or 3 and 50, and a trifle below the middle size.
"I come on a matter of business, sir," said Ralph Nickleby, presenting himself, closely followed by Nicholas. "There was an advertisement of yours in the papers this morning."
"Aye, there was, sir," said Squeers. "Won't you be seated?"
Ralph suited the action to the word.
"This is my nephew, sir, Mr. Nicholas Nickleby."
"How do you do, sir?"
said Squeers.
Nicholas bowed.
"Perhaps you recollect me," said Ralph, looking narrowly at the schoolmaster.
You paid me a small account at each of my half-yearly visits to town for some years, I think, sir,
replied Squeers.
I did, rejoined Ralph.
For the parents of a boy named Dorker, who unfortunately...
Unfortunately died at Dotheboys Hall, said Ralph, finishing the sentence.
I remember very well, sir,
rejoined Squeers.
Mrs. Squeers, sir, was as partial to that lad as if he'd been her own.
Ralph smiled as if he meant anything but smiling. Well, he said, you have advertised for an able assistant, sir?
Precisely so, said Squeers.
Then here he is, said Ralph. My nephew Nicholas, hot from school, with everything he learnt there fermenting in his head and nothing fermenting in his pocket, is just the man you want.
I am afraid, said Squeers. I am afraid the young man won't suit me.
Yes, he will. I know better. Let me have two words with you.
The two words were had apart. In a couple of minutes, Mr. Wackford Squeers announced that Mr. Nicholas Nickleby was, from that moment, thoroughly nominated to and installed in the office of First Assistant Master at Dotheboys Hall.
Your uncle's recommendation has done it, Mr. Nickleby, said Wackford Squeers.
Nicholas, overjoyed at his success, shook his uncle's hand warmly and could almost have worshipped Squeers upon the spot.
At 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, Mr. Nickleby, said Squeers, the coach starts. You must be here at 4:15.
Certainly, sir, said Nicholas. And I shall be here in the morning to see you fairly off, said Ralph. No skulking.
Thank you, sir, replied Nicholas. I never shall forget this kindness.
Take care you don't, replied his uncle. You had better go home now and pack up what you've got to pack. Do you think you could find your way to Golden Square first?
Certainly, said Nicholas. I can easily inquire.
Leave these papers with my clerk, then, said Ralph, producing a small parcel, and tell him to wait till I come home.
Nicholas cheerfully undertook the errand and found Golden Square in due course. Mr. Noggs, who had stepped out for a minute or so to the public house, was opening the door with a latchkey as Nicholas reached the steps.
"What's that?"
inquired Noggs, pointing to the parcel. "Papers, from my uncle," replied Nicholas. "And you're to have the goodness to wait till he comes home, if you please."
"Uncle?"
cried Noggs. "Mr. Nickleby," said Nicholas, in explanation. Newman said nothing, but folding his arms and thrusting his head forward so as to obtain a nearer view of Nicholas's face, scanned his features closely. At last, Newman Noggs drew a long breath and said that if the young gentleman did not object to tell, he should like to know what his uncle was going to do for him. Nicholas had not the least objection in the world, and entered into a fervent and glowing description of all the honours and advantages to be derived from his appointment at that seat of learning, Dotheboys Hall. "But what's the matter? Are you ill?" said Nicholas, suddenly breaking off as his companion, after throwing himself into a variety of uncouth attitudes, cracked his finger joints as if he were snapping all the bones in his hands. Newman Noggs made no reply, but went on shrugging his shoulders and cracking his finger joints, smiling horribly all the time, and looking steadfastly at nothing out of the tops of his eyes in a most ghastly manner. At first, Nicholas thought the mysterious man was in a fit, but on further consideration decided that he was in liquor, under which circumstances he deemed it prudent to make off at once. He looked back when he had got down the street. Newman Noggs was still indulging in the same extraordinary gestures, and the cracking of his fingers sounded louder than ever. As Nicholas waited with Mr. Squeers for the coach next morning, his uncle, Mr. Ralph Nickleby, accosted him.
Here you are, sir, said Ralph.
Uncle, farewell. Thank you heartily for all you have done and all you mean to do. With this hasty adieu, Nicholas mounted nimbly to his seat. At this moment, Nicholas felt somebody pulling softly at his leg. He looked down, and there stood Newman Noggs, who pushed up into his hand a dirty letter.
"What's this?" inquired Nicholas.
"Hush!" rejoined Noggs, pointing to Mr. Ralph Nickleby, who was saying a few earnest words to Squeers a short distance off.
"Take it. Read it. Nobody knows. That's all."